Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Grant Napier Show.
This is the Grant Napier Show with Doug Christie.
This team, there he is again. My goodness.
Doug Christie, what a pass. Men against boys.
The Grant Napier Show with Doug Christie.
Crouches, gets a step to the baseline. Right on with the right hand. Oh, boy.
Now, Grant Napier.
No words, man. That's how I start off the show. No words.
I got a word. Man on first. That's the word.
I don't care. But here's what I do care about. All right? It's not important. What's important is, all right, we're going to talk football today. That's important.
Oh, boy. We going NFC South?
We are going NFC South, which I think is probably is got to be the most balanced division in football outside of Tampa. In other words, when you look at New Orleans, Atlanta, and Carolina.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's going to be, you can look at what went on last year. New Orleans 11-5, Carolina 11-5. Atlanta came back to the pack a little bit after a Super Bowl run at 10-6, and Tampa Bay has been just under delivering, or maybe that's who they are at 5-11. But those three teams, New Orleans, Carolina, and Atlanta, all I think really believe that in the NFC they are gonna have something to say when it's all said and done, Grant.
All right, obviously a lot of news coming out of Jacksonville because of Jalen Ramsey's comments that were published in GQ
yes.
magazine. Jalen Ramsey, shut up, Jalen Ramsey. You know, stop it already, would you please? Who's Jalen Ramsey? You know, that's number one. And number two, okay, like, you know, shame on GQ magazine in one sense. It's not a sports magazine, first of all. You got to get Jalen Ramsey to make controversial comments to sell your magazine. No wonder the guy is suspended. And he's not suspended for this, but he should be suspended for this because that's idiotic.
Attaboy, first and third. No,
hey,
outs.
We don't care about the game. We don't care.
Grant,
the game's not important.
You see the hat? I was going to flip it around.
Hey, you know what? If the game was important, we'd have it on. So let's not talk about the game. But what about Jalen Ramsey?
I'm not mad at Jalen Ramsey's comments because, first of all, I think a little bit tongue-in-cheek from him. I think that he's the type of player, Grant, he likes to go after people verbally and see if he can get under their skin and different things like that. So I think that there's an entertainment value to what he's doing. And if that's what he needs to get up and get himself excited to go after people,
nobody in Jacksonville's happy with this guy right now. I can guarantee you that. I know the head coach is furious at him. He suspended him for a week. And now this is the last thing you want as a football. You don't want distractions. And this is now developing into a distraction. Speaking of distractions, did you get a chance to see Hard Knocks last night?
Yes, I did.
Wasn't that great?
You know, listen, if you just watch Hard Knocks and you didn't know anything about the Cleveland Browns, you'd think they might win the Super Bowl this year because the production value of that thing, did you see when Baker Mayfield walked on the field and they had him all in HD and it slowed down and dun-dun-dun.
They do a phenomenal job with that, don't they?
It is fantastic.
They really do an absolutely phenomenal job. Well, they do an incredible job with that show. Isn't it interesting to see some of the other elements that they incorporate to humanize these players? That's what I think I like the most about this show is the way they humanize the players.
Well,
you know?
Speaking of humanizing players, your take on the I thought it was interesting. The Antonio Callaway, Hugh Jackson,
yep.
The whole thing, he gets pulled over.
Yep.
There's a little bit of marijuana. There's bullets. There's different things. He's been a hard hit. He went to the
right.
combine. He
yep.
tested positive. He's had some problems.
Yep.
The punishment, and I was watching, Grant, I don't know about you. I'm watching thinking, man, he did that and he's not telling. I've been in that position as a kid. I didn't tell my mom something and I'm thinking, looking at her and she's looking at me going, what the hell is wrong with you?
You know what my biggest problem is with everything?
Tell me.
Is that it was 2:30 in the morning during training camp. That's my biggest problem with everything that happened.
That didn't even get brought up.
Okay.
And nothing happened. What's our man say about
right? But no,
her?
So you're a rookie.
Yes.
You are in your first training camp.
Right.
It's 2:30 in the morning.
Yep.
And
you're not out getting a cafe latte.
Right.
I'm just saying.
So to me, like, those are major, major red flags.
Now, I say that, Grant. The kid's talented. Let's take that and put it to the side. And a lot of times that's what we do, is if a kid is talented, they will get rid of all that. If he learns a lesson, because his punishment was to play every single down of the game. And I wasn't particularly mad with you. I think that is something that, I mean, now you do run the risk of him getting an injury or what have you, but if he learns from that, then it was a job well done, because the kid is talented.
I love the relationship that they're showing with Kajust and his father.
That's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, and I just looked up his bio. I did not realize this. He's from where I'm from. He's from Syosset, New York, on Long Island. I didn't even know that. But I just Googled him. But isn't that phenomenal, the relationship that he has with his father?
It is. And when you say humanize, that's a perfect word.
Yes.
Because they're sitting there by the lake, and he breaks down because his dad didn't even tell him that he recently had a heart attack, those type of things. It's you see them in a total different light. And Grant, what it does for the average person just tuning in, now I'm rooting for Kajust. I want him to make the team. I have a vested interest in it. Lots of fun.
A Stanford product. And again, you know, that's we keep on talking about this. This is one of the real great things that we get a chance to see every year with Hard Knocks. You know, we get to see behind the scenes. And I got to tell you something else that I give HBO a lot of credit. And I'll tell you something else. I give the Cleveland Browns a lot of credit, because they could have said no
to that,
to the meeting.
Yep.
About this guy getting in trouble.
Yep.
And it was right there in the open.
Yep.
And there was nothing, to my knowledge, that was edited out. So
no.
We got a chance to see how the general manager and the head coach deal with discipline when players overstep. And I'll tell you what I like about Hugh Jackson. I like the fact that Hugh Jackson said, you know what, I believe in mulligans, but I don't believe in mulligans if you're lying to me. And if you're lying to me, you're done.
Yeah.
There are no mulligans. And all right, so if you're going to lie to me, if I put my neck out and you're lying, you're gone. I don't care who you are, you're gone.
One thing I will say about the NFL, once you get in there, it seems that everything is washed clean. I don't know if that's always the right way to do it, but they give you the opportunity. But now I will say this, they give multiple opportunities. But like for this kid, I was watching, I can't remember who it was this morning. It might have been Skip. And he was saying at that particular time they should have cut him when they were in that meeting. And I was thinking to myself, no, I don't think that that's the right thing to do in that scenario. Give the young man a chance. If he can turn his life around, that is probably the biggest mulligan that you can give somebody. He at least has the opportunity. And now we'll all watch and see what he does with it.
Yeah, pretty amazing, though, that whole sequence and everything else. And here's the other thing. HBO, for them to get that police video,
yes,
which was taken from the police car,
right,
have access to it,
right,
be able to show it, edit it, put it all in and everything else, it's pretty remarkable.
It is. And I also, Tyrod Taylor and Baker Mayfield's relationship, I like watching that.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
I like watching Baker Mayfield, man. I mean, now I understand.
He's going to be a good quarterback. I really think yes.
That's what I see. But now this is what I'm saying, though. Is it some of the production value? Because the production value makes you think he's going to be a world beater. But I will tell you, the kid looks to be a player. Come on, Em.
You know what? You know what? The production value is great. But you kind of knew coming in from Oklahoma, the moxie that he had, that the book on him was his height.
Right.
There's the competitiveness, the moxie, everything you need, the leadership, that was never in question with him. The question was, would he be able to, for lack of a better term, control himself? He gets very excitable.
Right.
And as a quarterback, does that work as a quarterback, you know, in the NFL? So it remains to be seen.
It does. But I will say this, Grant. I'm looking at his command of the huddle, the way he talks to his offensive linemen, the encouragement that he gives them, the way that he challenges them. All those different things make the team and his teammates believe in him. And that's one thing that I think it jumps off the screen. That's how he can run that little slant to Callaway. That's how he can find his tight end in the corner of the end zone a couple times. I'm liking what I see from Baker Mayfield, and I'm liking what I see from Tyrod Taylor, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't know why. Now, I understand Buffalo gets a new guy, but I like Tyrod Taylor. I don't know who's going to win that job. I will say Baker Mayfield obviously has the biggest upside because he is younger, and he looks to be a gamer is what he looks to be, Grant. It's like you throw him out there. Yeah, you can talk about all the stuff that he can't do, but he can do some stuff that's solid.
All right, so if you had a chance to watch that and you want to talk about it, we'll do so. At 339-1140. That's 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. All right, coming up on the show today, as I said, we are going to talk a lot of football, and we are going to preview, as Doug said, the NFC South. And we're going to start at 3:30 with John DeShazer, Saints color analyst and writer for Saints.com. At 4:30, we'll spend a couple minutes talking about the Carolina Panthers with Jim Zoak. Anthony Becht, former NFL tight end for the Jets, is going to talk to us about the Bucs. Anthony's also the color analyst with Iron Eagle on the Jets games. So we've got all of that coming up today on Sports 1140 KHTK. Very quiet. I think that someone asked me this when I was out earlier. It was a schedule question about the NBA, and then the question wasn't about the schedule. It was about what's going on now. And I said, nothing is going on now. August is vacation month in the NBA. It's when the execs and the coaches and everyone else kind of gets away. Mm-hmm. This is your downtime. We've gone through the draft. We've gone through free agency and all of that. Yep. August is the dead month in the NBA. Things won't get revved up until around Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, you take advantage of it while you can, because once this train leaves the station, Grant, you know there's 8 solid months of nonstop, constant movement, and it's a good time for a lot of people to get away. I was just talking with Matt George about kind of what players do during this time. And I told him, I said, it would vary for me because it depends on what I'm working on mm-hmm. and what I want to kind of peak at a certain time. Sometimes it was skills. Sometimes it was conditioning. Sometimes it was strength and flexibility. It just depends.
And it was probably different at 23 than it was at 30.
Yes. And that spot on, because conditioning wise now I might not run as hard at 30 as I did at 23, but I'll be in the same place. I just do it a different way. That's
right.
A good point.
Yep. All right. Again, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Giants now have beat the Dodgers 2 in a row. Did you see the incident last night?
Well, look, first of all, Puig and the San Francisco Giants and the whole L.A. Dodgers, they have a history, so they go through it. I didn't personally think what he did was bad because I thought he was frustrated with himself.
Right, and we don't know what was said between Hundley, the catcher for the Giants, and Puig.
Yeah.
But we do know that you can get under Puig's skin very much the way you see players try to get under DeMarcus' skin and throw them off their game. And you saw Puig snap a little bit.
Which, to be honest, if I'm an opponent, I'm doing that, Grant. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say something. I'm going to do touch you something to see if you're going to just fly off the handle. But to the point, I didn't think. Now, if Hundley sends something different, I don't know. We have to go, because I only heard Puig talk. I didn't hear Hundley talk. But I didn't. I thought Puig was mad with himself that he missed that pitch.
Yeah. Again, if you didn't see it, Puig swatted his bat in frustration when he fouled off a pitch.
Yes.
All right. And then Hundley said something. They got chest to chest, and then one thing leads to another.
Yeah, San Francisco's hanging around, Grant.
Yeah, they are. Just said the key word. They're hanging around. They're hanging around. And I said this yesterday. I don't think they're going to do it,
right?
Because I don't think they're good enough. But here's the deal. Okay, when you look at the standings right now, in Major League Baseball, and I'm not even going to talk about the wild card yet. The Giants are only 5 back, all right? They're 5 back in the loss column of Arizona. The problem with being 5 back, as I said yesterday, they're behind Colorado and they're behind the Dodgers, so they got to catch 3 teams. So they could still win the division. Now, if you want to talk about the wild card, all right, it's unrealistic that they're going to be a wild card because they have Milwaukee, Philly, St. Louis, Colorado, the Dodgers, and the Pirates ahead of them. Not impossible, unrealistic. So to me, if they're going to make the playoffs, it's going to have to be by winning the division.
If we would have started the season and said that there's a scenario where the Nationals and the Dodgers don't make the playoffs this year, I think people would have thought we were crazy. But
especially the Dodgers.
Especially,
after what they did last year.
I would think that they're going to make it, Grant. But you talk about the Cards. They are making a serious run.
They sure are.
And listen, the Phillies and, man, oh, man.
And the Braves. I mean, they're right there in the NL East. I mean, those two teams, I got to give them a lot of credit. I did not think that they would be here. I thought they would fade. But, you know, I thought Philly, you know, you look at Philly at 65 and 53 and Atlanta at 67 and 51. This thing is going right down to the wire. Make no mistake about it. And when you talk about Philadelphia, they got great pitching. They really do. I'm telling you, when you got Arrieta and Nola, and how good has Nola been? I mean, he's 13-3 with an ERA of 2.28. All right. So here's the deal. You get into the playoffs with an experienced Jake Arrieta. Mm-hmm. You got Nola, all right, who has been incredible this year. I mean, absolutely incredible. I mean, this team, the Philadelphia Phillies, they're a team that you can't just go, oh, you know, they're Philadelphia. No, they've showed all year they're for real.
Yes, they are. And when you look at the Atlanta Braves, Ronald Acuna Jr., man, I mean, goodness gracious, Grant.
I know.
Man, and you know what? Some of these, when you look at like Ronald Acuna Jr., Grant, he's young. He maybe not even know better. And he's just going up, happy to play baseball, having a good time. And they are slapping it all around the yard. But you talk about pitching. Jake Arrieta has been there before. He's done it. You get a guy like that hot, you get him a little bat behind him, and you never know.
Well, you talk about Acuna. I mean, I would say that the majority of baseball fans wouldn't have been able to answer who's Ronald Acuna, you know, a few months ago. And here's the guy that is, wow. I mean, he's on a tear right now. No one can get him out.
I mean, Grant, smooth swing. The kid, he's hitting for power.
Hey,
he does it all.
By the way, I would have been one of those. If you would have asked me who Ronald Acuna is, I would have said, I have no idea.
Well, you know, you and I talked, and I want to say this was earlier when they first started kind of making their run at Atlanta, and you said, I think they're about 2 years away.
Yes.
Like a guy like Acuna Jr.
Yep.
In 2 years, he'll be probably a household name if he keeps playing like this. But he's doing it right now, and he's continuing on doing it to the point where they're 67 and 51, number one in the NL East.
Yeah, and then again, I want to know when Mike Rizzo is going to be held responsible for the Nationals being disappointing every year. They're 60 and 60. They're not making the playoffs this year unless they go on an unbelievable tear. They've lost three in a row. Mike Rizzo, his first awful move was when he shut down Steven Strasburg when the Nats had the best record in baseball and they had the best team in baseball, and he mismanaged that whole thing. And the Nationals have never really rebounded from that, and they can't win a playoff series. They are a huge disappointment.
Wasn't that was that 3 years ago?
I think it was 5 years ago.
Oh, it was that? Okay. Was that after his Tommy John or before?
No, that was before.
Before, okay. Yeah, I remember that because there was so much conversation with sports radio and television and what have you about, look, they are in a prime situation to make a run. If you shut him down, what does that say about what you're saying in your clubhouse? And they did, and they haven't recovered as of yet.
I mean, when you look at the career of Steven Strasburg.
Yes.
And you look at, you know, he's not even a 500 pitcher now. Now he's hurt. He's on the disabled list. But when you look at this guy's career and you think about, when you have a chance to win, which the Nationals had there, mm-hmm. and you shut the guy down in September, you're not only preventing your team from having a chance to win, you're ripping the heart out of the clubhouse. And I know that for a fact because I spoke with people with the organization. That was as bad of a move as you can possibly make, period.
And to say that, Grant, why do you think that they're sticking with him then? As a manager,
as general manager.
I mean, excuse me.
General, I don't know. Manager. I can't answer that question. It's a great question. I honestly cannot answer that question. Why Mike Rizzo is still there? But you know, when you think back to what Strasburg's career has been like and how good he was, whenever it was it 5 years ago? I'd have to look it up. I'm doing this off the top of my head.
2011.
But, I mean, come on now. I mean, it's just been awful.
Yeah, in 2010, 2.9. 2011, 1.5. 2012, 3.1. 13, which would be 5 years ago, he was 3.0. And it's just kind of crept up from there.
All right. 339-1140. That's 339-1140. And, you know, again, you have Max Scherzer, who's the best pitcher on that staff. All right. You have a team that has underachieved. All right. You have a general manager who has been the one constant. All right. And yet, here we are. Nothing's really changed.
Yeah, and you could go to the trade deadline, Grant, with the chance to trade Bryce Harper and maybe reset yourself with a lot of young talent because you would have got it. Or don't trade and tell your fans that you're going to go for it, but you're right about 500, and that's pretty much what you've been all year. Everyone's been waiting for him to make a move, but they haven't been able to make that move.
I'm going to go back, and we'll move on after this because we're going to talk some football. Here's the biggest issue I had with what they did with Strasburg. If you had him on an innings count, which I get, all right, pitch count, inning count, call it whatever you want.
Right.
Instead of bringing him back in, I believe, May that year, you should have brought him back at the end of June, because you should have had enough foresight to say, well, you know what, if we make the playoffs, I'd rather have him in October than I would rather have him in May.
Right.
So in my opinion, they erred by starting him too soon. That's what happened.
That's a good point. You got to see, like, if he's going to run out of innings, let him run out of innings in the World Series, in the Divisional Series, something like that, as opposed to games that don't mean anything, but they're regular season games.
All right, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. We will take the break. We'll come back. We'll start previewing the NFC South next. All right, all guests come to you via the Fire Wings hotline. Try one of their delicious flavors of wings today. Fire Wings, just wing it. Well, when we were at the Celebrity Golf Tournament, Doug, we had a blast talking with Sean Payton on the driving range for, yes, you know, about 10 minutes, getting a little preview of the Saints after the way their season ended last year. We're going to talk with the Saints color analyst and a writer for Saints.com, John DeShazier. John, it's Grant Napier and Doug Christie. First of all, I want to make sure I'm pronouncing your last name correctly.
DeShazier, but look, you came really close, and I've been called a lot worse.
You know, we were talking with Coach Payton up at Tahoe and about, you know, getting over the way the season ended last year. Talk to me about that. How do players – I know you never forget it, but what's the best way to move on from something like that?
Well, I mean, you have to embrace what happened, and you know that it was, you know, I won't say a tragedy because it's not like anybody perished, but, I mean, it's a debilitating, heartbreaking way to lose. And yet, if you're the Saints, the perspective you have to take is, one, you take the hurt, and two, you look at the positives from it. A great comeback in the second half against Minnesota, a really young team that was one play away, one stop away from advancing to the NFC Championship game. And those are the positives you take from it, that, you know, you were a step away from almost, you know, you were right there at the doorstep. Now, you know, then you go back to the bottom of the hill and you try to start pushing that rock up the hill again the next season. And it's a difficult process, but you have fuel on two fronts. One, you have the fuel that you ticked off at the way it ended. And then you have the fuel that you were ticked off, but you were really close to getting where you wanted to be, hopefully the Super Bowl. So I think from that standpoint, you know, they've handled it well. I don't think there's been a lot of outward, you know, emotion about it. After that game, now, of course, they were heartbroken, everybody, because, you know, you play the game and, you know, Doug being a former athlete, when you get close, man, and you can taste it and you can sniff it and it gets snatched away from you like that, that's got to be a hurting thing. So after the game and earlier into the off season, you know, they kind of, you know, embraced it and, you know, I don't want to say wallowed in it, but they felt the sting of it for a while. But then, you know, sooner or later, you got to put it away and you got to get back to work. And you hope, you know, they're saying all the right things. They're saying it's going to fuel them this season. And you hope that that's going to be the case for them.
You know, John, when you look at this team after they got as close as they did, that is painful. You are right. A guy in Drew Brees now, season 18, 39 years old. I say this, and I like your take. He doesn't carry the load but he can carry the load when needed. And I say that because you know he can be spectacular, but now with so many different pieces, a really good all-around team, do they more look at Drew as when we need you, you go ahead and run the show?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, they're in a position now where the offense finally is balanced after probably 5 or 6 years of talking about balance. In fact, they probably hadn't been balanced really since 2011 or something like that, but they've been talking about the imbalance, and they never achieved it the way they wanted to. Last year, with Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram running the football the way they did and the offensive line performing the way it did, they finally got back to that balance. Now, can Drew Brees still do it? Well, Carolina dared him to in the playoffs in the wild card game, and yeah, he lit him up. So, you know, and then Minnesota pretty much kind of challenged him to do it in the NFC divisional game, and he got them in the second half. So he can still do it. But now he doesn't have to. And that hopefully for Drew Brees will prolong his career. Now, we know he's talked about playing into his 40s. He's about to hit 40. He still looks as good physically, and he's still as efficient, and he's still as accurate as he has ever been. And yet he doesn't seem to be, you know, the aging process doesn't seem to be really wearing on him now.
John, every team's
got... We all know Father Time catches up, but right now he looks good.
John, we all know every team in the NFL's got some question marks. What are the question marks for the Saints as we're 3 weeks away from opening day?
Well, the question marks for the Saints really are kind of small things, and the things that really make a difference, though. They need to find a returner. Those hidden yards that you might be able to gain in the return game where you can swing field position and gain some advantages there, they hadn't had a return guy really since Darren Sproles was traded a couple of years ago. So they're trying to fill that position. They need to find a right defensive end. Alex Okafor played there last year. He ruptured his Achilles, couldn't finish out the season. Trey Hendrickson is another candidate. They drafted Marcus Davenport. He's been out for the last couple of weeks with an injury. So, you know, they're trying to work him back into the rotation. If you've got Cam Jordan on the left side, and you've got Sheldon Rankin, that defensive tackle, along with a guy like David Onyemata and Tyler Davidson. They've got some really good underrated defensive tackles. You've got to find a guy for that right end. And can Marcus Davenport be that guy? Well, last year, Alex Okafor was really good at it until he ruptured his Achilles. He was having a career year. They've got to find a guy to play over on that side of the defensive line. And that, but really, the other vacancies are fairly minor. Mark Ingram's going to miss the first four games because of that suspension. And so you have to find a running back to complement Alvin Kamara. But Alvin Kamara is a guy who's capable of handling more than 10, 12 touches a game, which is what he did last year. Now, you don't want to run him in the ground, but he's capable of doing that. But they need to find a complement to him. But, again, the Saints have a lot of starters back from last year. And so I think that the vacancies are fairly minor.
John, left defensive end, Jordan Cameron, 62 tackles, 13 sacks. Do you see that? Do you see him continuing to improve on that left side?
Yeah, he's an animal. He is something. I mean, now I don't know if his numbers will be as good because, you know, anybody who looked at the tape, one, you'll get rid of the ball quicker.
Okay.
And two, you probably won't throw as much to his side because I want to say he batted down like 13 passes last year. Something crazy.
That is.
It was phenomenal to see him and his timing. So I don't think teams will allow him to be what he was last year just by quicker drops and those kinds of things. But he plays the run as well as the pass. And if you got to throw it, he can get to the quarterback, man. He is something special to watch because his motor doesn't end. He's the same on snap 62 as he is on snap number two. I mean, his motor doesn't stop. And I mean, he is a fit for offensive lineman. And he'll tell you, and he'll tell them. And they know they can't do a thing about it.
Ooh, you got to like that.
Yeah. John, appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Anytime, guys.
Yep, be well. All right, getting a little preview on the New Orleans Saints. If you want to call the show, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. I think you toss a coin right now between the Saints and the Falcons. I think that I'd give the edge to Atlanta because I think they have a better defense, and I think that that will be the difference. I think I'd give the edge offensively by a smidgen to New Orleans just because I think Breeze is more consistent, but by a smidgen. And I might even have to change that, but defensively, the Falcons – are better than the Saints. No, I don't think that's debatable.
Yeah, could the Falcons have obviously been in that, you know, little bit of a funk from going to the Super Bowl, having such an epic collapse? Yeah, that is possible. So I'm going to be looking, Grant, at the Falcons early to see what they do. You know, Mohamed Sanu,
yep.
You got Julio Jones back. You know, they have some really nice pieces. But this team, why the Saints are interesting is because you have a quarterback with the ability of a Drew Brees, but you are not depending upon him. Now, Ingram kind of messed everything up because he and Alvin Kamara had a really good thing. We didn't get to talk to John about Michael Thomas, but hopefully it might be a breakout year for a wide receiver that had 92 catches his first year and 104 last year. So that's kind of Drew Brees' kind of guy. So, yeah, you got to watch this team. This is a team that has a chance.
Roquan Smith talked to the media for the first time yesterday afternoon. He was asked about did he regret the decision to miss training camp. No, that's just the business side of things. It is what it is, and I'm just happy to be here now. That's probably the best way for him to answer that question.
Yeah, being a rookie, look, this was his first time through training camp. It's not it is a big thing because you miss a lot of stuff, but look, see it, hit it. That's what he's going to be doing right off the bat. You know, he's got to learn all the schematics and different things, but he's going to be flying around the field, you know, hitting some people.
Other news, the 49ers are in Houston, and they're practicing with the Houston Texans. And during their practice session today, tempers kind of, you know, got to the best of the players. DeAndre Hopkins, the outstanding wide receiver for Houston, and Jimmy Ward, defensive back for the Niners, got into it. I'll tell you this, Houston coach Bill O'Brien wasn't too happy because he kicked Hopkins off the field following the scuffle.
Look, this is something that you're going to have to deal with. If you're going to talk about training camps, you're going to say getting towards the end of training camps, guys are about sick of it, it's hot, a lot of different things. You're going to get tempers flying. And then you pair that with the fact that some guys just don't like some guys. It's going to get a little testy and getting after it. But to O'Brien's, you know, look, if this is going to be the way that we run our show, we don't fight, we don't do that. Let's just practice and get after it. So make an example out of Hopkins.
Yeah, I guess there are two ways of looking at this. Coaches talk about discipline, and coaches are like, well, if I allow this in practice, are they going to do it in a game and cost my team 15 yards on a critical drive? That's number one. Number two, you know, I got DeAndre Hopkins, who I can't win without DeAndre Hopkins.
Not
He's my home run guy.
Yes.
I can't afford having him getting in a skirmish and getting hurt. You know what I mean?
On top of the fact that I'm seeing a lot of these guys, they're throwing punches and the guy has a helmet on.
What are you thinking
Why
about?
Why in the
I know.
Heck would you swing on somebody with a helmet
and
on?
Here's the other deal. If you don't hit the helmet and you hit a shoulder pad, you can break your hand that way too. It's stupidity.
Get your finger caught in the face mask.
How stupid is that?
It makes no sense. I don't know.
Right? I mean, it's ridiculous.
I can't say anything about that. I always wondered when I saw that. Yeah, you got a helmet on. I'm going to punch you in the face.
Yeah, and again,
mask.
Yeah, it just makes absolutely no sense at all. And in this particular instance, Hopkins' helmet came off quickly, and Ward's helmet stayed on, and Hopkins is still trying to punch him in the head. Like, what are you thinking about?
I lost my protection. You might want to back up a little bit. I'm just saying, man. But you know what? They are those two guys, I could see them. I could see Ward and Hopkins getting after it. One saying, I'm going to lock you down. One saying, you don't have a chance to lock me down. They're getting after it.
You ever play Pebble Beach?
Not yet.
All right. Well, we got to do that.
500 around?
Well, we'll have to get someone that we know to help us out there.
We know some people?
I don't know, but I'm not paying $500.
Oh, I thought so you're not going to hook me up?
I got to hook myself up first, then I worry about you second. All right. We'll be right back. This is Sports 1140. All right, we are back with you here on Sports 1140, KHTK, 339-1140. That's 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. So I was out to lunch with my boys today, and my oldest son goes, Dad, what do you think this starting five is going to be for the Kings this year? I said, you know, that's a good question.
That is.
Doug and I talk about that all the time.
Yes.
And I said, I think I have three for sure. I'm not positive yet about the small forward and the power forward.
Three-fifths, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be Fox, Bogdanovich, and Cauley-Stein.
Okay.
And I don't know yet about three and four.
Well, camp is going to be a lot of fun to watch because I would agree with those. I would definitely I don't know about Willie Cauley-Stein, but I'm going to definitely go with Fox and Bogdanovich. So I only have two fifths right now, Grant. I got to see some people in action. I don't know. You know, I mean, young Harry might come in and blow everybody away. Bagley might come in and wreck the show. You don't know with young players. I mean, that's what we were just talking about, Ronald Acuña Jr.
Yeah, right.
Okay, I mean, look, this kid is – most kids that age don't do what he's doing, but he's doing it, like you said, probably mm-hmm. 2 years before ahead of schedule. That could happen with some of the Kings players as well.
All right, 339-1140, as I said, Grant Napier and Doug Christie. But if you had to guess right now, small forward, who are you taking? I think Justin Jackson's going to end up starting.
That's where I was going to go. That a boy! You know who Edwin Diaz is?
No, never heard of him.
Come on, baby. That away. Way to close him out. Put the brooms away, A's fans.
Moving on there, Grant. Let's talk about the Kings.
The non-playoff team?
I love you guys.
The team that's
man.
Not going to the playoffs you're excited about? Anyway,
what are we talking about?
So who's starting small forward?
I think I would go with you too, Grant. I think Justin Jackson, I think that he has the ability to score the basketball. That's what we saw in summer league. The thing, though, that is going to keep him on the floor, that if he really wants serious playing time, that is to improve on the defensive mm-hmm. side. Because that's – you think about it, Grant. Who's he going to be matching up at small forward? That is a powerful position. So you're not just going to go crazy and score 20, 25 probably on those type of players. So, but you are going to need to D them up a little bit. If you can get 10 to 15, maybe 18 some nights, and then you can slow them down maybe 2 or 4 points under their average, I think you're doing a solid job in improving on the defensive end. But I would go with you. Nice size at the small forward. And he looks to be improving in Justin Jackson.
Yeah, absolutely for that. You know, I would say Dave Joerger has a situation that you want because with the exception of point guard, and I'm not coaching the team, but
right.
with the exception of point guard, you could make an argument that all four of the other positions are up for grabs.
Yeah.
I mean, you got Buddy Hield, you got Iman Shumpert, you got Bogdan.
That you could be. And let's do this also. You have to pair skill sets, too. Mm. You and I talk a lot about Bogdanovich when he played with Willie Cauley-Stein, for instance.
Yes.
He knew how to use him on the alley-oops, the pick and rolls, the late passes, all those things. So you got to pair those up.
Where like a guy like Zach Randolph is not a good fit with De'Aaron Fox at all because he can't run up and down the court with De'Aaron.
Unless he's going to be the trail guy that shoots the three, and that's not what you want. You want him down low, posting up. So maybe he is that piece in the second unit that allows you to, when you need that bucket, go to him in the post or something like that.
Yeah, you made a great point, though. You got to match the pieces. They all have to fit, and certain guys are better. I still think Buddy is – I love what I saw with him coming off the bench. I just think that's a perfect role for him.
It is. And the fact that, in my opinion, watching Buddy Hield grow last year, he did some things that I wasn't sure he could do. One of them was defend consistently. I loved his energy. I loved when he wasn't making shots, he was still going after it. That shooting stroke that he has it's professional grade. If he continues to accept his role, and it is a powerful role, it's a role that Bobby Jackson had for us, and he brings points immediately off the bench, and you pair that with his consistency on the defensive end, I really like Buddy's growth last year.
Yeah, totally agree with you. And he's a guy that you hope develops into one of those sixth man of the year candidates. And if he does, this team becomes a lot better. That's for sure.
Well, listen, you have starters, you have go-to guys, you have defensive players, you have a lot of different pieces. Sixth man is a huge one, especially in today's game where sometimes, listen, if Bogdan was out with an ankle or something like that, Buddy is the type of player that can step in and start at the same time. There's so many different pieces that he brings, and if he is going to give you 15 to 18, 19 points off the game, and normally that's what he should be able to do, now you can pencil him in and you don't have to worry about your bench because that's the beginning of a solid bench.
All right, we'll continue to talk more as we get closer to the season. We know that the schedule is out, so we know that the Kings have 7 of their first 10 games on the road. And I like the way the Kings played on the road last year, but it was something that took them a while to find that rhythm on the road. Now, they did win their first game on the road, but in Dallas. But again, this team, especially against the East, because they're an inferior conference, the problem with that is when the East sees teams like Sacramento come in, they're like, okay, this is a game we can't afford to lose.
Yeah, they're licking their chops. And for the Kings, what in my opinion, Grant, what I want to see is I want to visually see improvement, meaning consistent effort and getting after it every single night. That has to be the first thing. The skills, the scoring, the rebounding, all those things I think improve with that consistency right there.
1 hour in the books, 3 hours left. Grant Napier, Doug Christie. Be right back on Sports 1140 KHDK.